Tonight's program. I'm Mike Malloy. Thanks for tuning in. It is Monday. This begins the last week of winter. Are you happy? I certainly am. It's also begins the last week, ostensibly the last week of the efforts by Obama and certain key Democrats to pass into law what is considered to be a health insurance reform legislation. That what is considered to be something that the American people need. I'm still fairly ambiguous about this. I hate what has how this debate has evolved over the past year. It's disgusting to me. It has shown me yet again that the elected people in this country don't care a tinker's damn about really running the country. It has this debate, this year-long debate, not really a debate, but the screaming match and the lies and the distortions have proven once again that we live in a dying empire, a dying country. There is no debate about how many trillions now that we spend on weaponry and death and destruction. Nobody lies about all that money spent on, except the people who want the money. All the money spent on weaponry and so-called defense. But the lies and distortions that have been told about this health care reform bill is just astonishing, which is not to say that I'm 100% in favor of it. I'm not. Like I said, I remain very ambiguous. I don't know what's going to happen. I just know that what I have seen from the Republicans has just given me a very bad stomach ache. I wish these sons of bitches would leave our political system. They're just destroying, they're absolutely destroying it. As far as what will happen this week, a lot of that depends on the bully pulpit that Barack Obama commands and also what Nancy Pelosi and to a lesser degree what Harry Reid can come up with. But I've been left with a question during pretty much the entirety of this this horrible debacle that has unfolded over the past year. Just this question. Why was single-payer health insurance? Why was that not presented from the very beginning? Building on a Scandinavian model, people who don't want national health care, okay, we don't need to go that route. But the single-payer route where folks can pick whatever healthcare provider they want, either curative or preventive, can pick whatever procedure they need based on input from a reliable physician who's advising them. And it is paid for through tax contributions the same way that Medicare or Medicaid is paid for. Why has that never been presented? Why have not Republicans presented this idea? Are they not, do they not still claim to be conservatives? Wouldn't single payer conserve so much the national treasury? Wouldn't it conserve so many lives? Wouldn't it conserve a person's freedom and independence to get the sort of health care that they believe in or that they choose to get? Republicans are not about liberty. They haven't been for decades. They are about coercion and death. So I guess my question is rhetorically stupid to ask that kind of a question. Why was single-payer health care not presented at the very beginning? As far as the Democratic side, where does this cowardice come from? I don't understand this. From the president all the way through the ranks of elected Democrats. Why the cowardice? Why not join the 20th century and provide single-payer health care to the last industrialized nation that doesn't have it? I mean, everybody from China to Israel has single-payer health care. Why don't we? We can talk about the strength and power and corruption of the health industrial complex vis-a-vis members of Congress, and that's a valid point. But is it not clear now and apparent now that the healthcare industry, the weapons industry, the coal industry, the oil industry, these industries own the electoral system in this country? The move a couple of weeks ago, the decision by the Supreme Court to grant predatory capitalism the same rights as individuals was stunning. It's not completely sunk in yet, I don't think, to the American people. It certainly, the commentators in this country have just kind of glossed over it in a manner to indicate they really don't care, because the commentators feel fairly protected. I don't think very many of them are human anyway. They're just extensions of the corporation that that pays their food bill. The care and feeding of people like Brian Williams, the care and feeding of people like Wolf Blitzer. So that lack of an open, sensible, logical discussion about single-payer health care. I don't expect an answer on this. There's not a Republican in the rank and file out there who even understands my question. Their brains have been so liquefied by people like Beck and the rest of the swine in this country who are removed from all this. Like I said, they are multimillionaires. They are utterly and absolutely removed from what most of us, if not 90% of us, have to endure day in and day out. The teabaggers have tried to start their own party. Beck is already pissing on them, just like he is pissing on progressive churches, because Beck wants to be king of the hill. He doesn't want any competition whatsoever. He's knocked off Limbaugh and Hannity and O'Reilly and the rest of the swine. So the teabaggers have listened to all this garbage about health care. Now, granted, they are a minority, but they're a vocal minority. What about the vast majority of Americans who have not notified their representatives and their senators 8 months ago, 10 months ago? Stop the garbage. Stop the crap. We want single payer. It's very simple. We want Medicare for everybody. Very simple. It'll be paid for. Payroll deductions, taxes, however you want to figure it out. But stop the goddamn insanity and get real. Why did nobody do that? Oh, I realize there have been some liberal organizations that attempted to do that. You know, they put up the websites here, sign the petition, get it to your member of Congress. How many people did that? 10,000, 100,000, 500,000. How does that compare with the number of people in this country who need single payer health care, which is everybody, even the rich, putrid, predatory sons of bitches at the top of the heap? Don't they understand? The slime balls, the people who feast on the rest of us, the single payer would help them too. It would free up more money into the system, which would give them more to steal, more to rip off, more to suck up with their predatory capitalist methods. But no, even they, even the slime at the top, the pond scum, decided to fight this. And all the way down through the rank and file, people who desperately need health insurance, desperately need to have a sensible single-payer system, have done everything in their power to work against their own interests. This is something I'll not understand ever, how this came about. It's kind of like the debate, I use that term very loosely, going on right now about educational standards in this filthy crap hole called Texas. We're going to talk about that tonight, too, how the right-wing Nazis in Texas have prevailed on the Texas School Board about textbook inclusions and exclusions. It's obscene. It's just a goddamn obscenity. But the healthcare thing, I simply cannot understand how and why we, the American people, let this get so completely away from us. If you're tired of the crying, come on. If you're tired of people dying, come on. If you're tired of the fighting, come on. No more wars, no more lying, come on. All my people in the world, come on. Every boy, every girl, come on. If you know it ain't over till God says that it's over, come on. Come on, let's go.
Truth seekers, here's the truth speaker, Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. We're going to do a moment with Bob coming up at some point tonight. Kind of interesting. Yeah, I know what he said. A couple of months ago, Dennis Kucinich sent out a newsletter to members of his constituency in Ohio's 10th district. And Kucinich has been just about the only member of Congress. There's a handful. I think John Conyers is another one who has consistently held out for responsive health care reform. He voted against the House bill as presented to the House back in December. And in his newsletter, he had some frequently asked questions. Why did you vote against the bill? Kucinich's answer, the legislation requires Americans to purchase insurance, mostly from for-profit private insurance companies, or pay a penalty. Having insurance is not the same thing as having health care, since insurance companies make money by not providing health care. Now, let me digress. Who in this country doesn't understand that yet? I mean, why is that so? By one means or another, the only way health insurance companies make money is by not paying claims. Why does that not sink in? Now, the quick answer might be from some wise ass is, well, Malloy, you're absolutely wrong. They can pay all the claims they want as long as their income exceeds their outgo. Really? But don't the insurance companies also say that the healthy young people in this country are not buying insurance? Is that not why insurance premiums have gone up 20, 40, 50, 60% this past, notice were sent out this past month, around the first of the year? The only way insurance companies make a profit is by not paying their insured, by taking in the money and not paying the claims. So as Kucinich points out, people will therefore pay twice. They would pay for premiums under this new plan, directly or through their employer. Secondly, tax dollars will be used to subsidize private insurance companies. Now that, what he's referring to there is the exchange. As a result, insurance companies would gain at least 21 million new customers and at least $70 billion in new annual revenue. Insurance companies use an elaborate private bureaucracy to deny care, deny claims, delay payments. The legislation that's on the table does little to control premiums, copays, or deductibles. There were no real controls on cost, and it did not put a stop to most of the methods by which insurers deny care. I, Kucinich writes, could not support such legislation. Next question, but wasn't the bill a step in the right direction? I digress. That's kind of where I'm at. Isn't this a step in the right direction? Unambiguity of people like Kucinich who are convinced it was not a step in the right direction comes in his answer. No. It was not a step in the right direction. The bill eliminated hopes for reducing or controlling insurance premiums. Insurance companies have forced double-digit increases in premiums in each of the last 4 years. A national single-payer plan was taken off the table at the very beginning of the debate. Consumers only had two hopes that the aggressive premium increases would be halted. First, a robust public option and an amendment which protects the right of states to create a single-payer system. The robust public option initially would have covered 129 million Americans and offered real competition with the insurance companies. Significant compromises whittled down the number of beneficiaries to 6 million Americans. The state single-payer amendment, which I authored, passed the Education and Labor Committee, but it was later taken out of the bill under pressure from the insurance companies and at the insistence of the White House. Therefore, all of this leaves consumers at the mercy of the insurance companies. Next question to Kucinich. Did you work with other members of Congress to try to improve the bill? Answer, yes. In addition to securing a bipartisan vote for the passage of the state single-payer amendment, I was able to add four other amendments in the bill. Three were aimed at driving down the cost of prescription drugs, preventing insurance companies from changing Americans' coverage unless Americans can switch plans, and improving access to integrative medicine. Unfortunately, the substance of these amendments was removed from the bill in compromises made behind closed doors. One amendment survived. It provides consumers more information about the health care plans in which their doctor participates. And then this, the alternative, the Conyers-Kucinich single-payer plan, Medicare for All. What about that? Kucinich answers, I co-authored with Representative John Conyers, H.R. 676, Medicare for All, which would ensure that all Americans have health care with no premiums, no co-pays, no deductibles, and with the doctor of their choice. There are 87 congressional co-sponsors. And then the next question, which we'll get to after the break, how would you pay for it? Stay with us. I'm Mike Mueller. To Congressman Dennis Kucinich by members of the 10th Congressional District in Ohio, his home district, regarding his no vote on health care reform. Why did you vote against the bill? And he explains why. Wasn't the bill a step in the right direction? No. Did you work with other members of Congress to try to improve the bill? Yes. And the last question, what about the Conyers-Kucinich single-payer plan, which was, in effect, Medicare for everybody? And Kucinich says, I co-authored with John Conyers H.R. 676, Medicare for All, which would ensure that all Americans have health care with no premiums, no co-pays, no deductibles, and with a doctor of their choice. There are 87 congressional co-sponsors. Question, how would you pay for it? Answer, America spends $2.4 trillion a year in health care, twice as much per capita as other nations. Nations which provide health care for their citizens. We are already paying for a universal standard of care. We're not getting it because one of every $3, or $800 billion a year, goes to massive insurance bureaucracies and to corporate profits, stock options, marketing, multi-million dollar salaries. Medicare, on the other hand, is not for profit. If we took all the money from the present system that is not used for care and put it into Medicare for all, we would have enough to cover all Americans' health care needs, including vision care, dental care, mental health care, prescription drugs, and long-term care. You understand what he's saying with that? If we just took out of what we spend the $800 billion a year that goes to the insurance companies, from top to bottom, from the people who sweep the floors at night, to the people who draw the multi-million dollar salaries, to the stockholders, just get rid of all that. $800 billion in savings, which would then be used in Medicare for all to have enough to cover health care needs, vision care, dental care, mental health care, prescription drugs, and long-term care. And the members of Congress are saying no to that. And the President of the United States is saying no to that. Republicans and a handful of Democrats are saying no. The insurance industry says no. The multi-million dollar salaried CEOs say no. No, goddamn you peasants. No, you're not going to have it. No. And what do? Nothing. Next question. Are you advocating, Dennis, a government-run system? Answer. No. Under H.R. 676, Medicare would pay the bills with huge administrative cost savings. People would be able to choose any doctor. The government would not run the hospitals or intervene with patients' care. And there's more. You can go to Kucinich.com. Yeah, I guess so. But this is the part that is astonishing to me. How many times did those simple salient facts come up during the past 12 months of shrieking lies? These psychotic sons of bitches from the tea baggers movement storming into meetings where intelligent or sensible or curious questions could have been asked. Well, the right wingers on radio and television, the Beck bastards, have driven their terminally faithful with bullwhips to get out there and work against their own best interests. Why? I don't get this. I realize we're stupid in this country. I realize we are grossly ignorant and we are lied to 24/7, 365 by the entire bulk of mainstream media. All of it. The lies may vary in intensity and degree, but they're still lies. All of it. All of it. Some are lies of omission. Some are lies of commission. So here we sit. $800 billion. That's how much we now spend on weaponry and death and destruction. That's how much money goes to this vast private health care bureaucracy, salaries, pension plans, stock options, profits. Remember, the only way an health insurance company makes money is by not paying for health care. Now, you might say, well, Mike, not true. They invest their money. Where does the money they invest come from? Not paying for health care claims. But we're just going to roll over and say, thank you, sir, may I have another? We are a miserable collection of people, aren't we? Huh? Larry writes, Mike, when I was a boy on the farm, we raised chickens. If a chicken got sick, we killed it to prevent it spreading disease to the rest of the flock. Killing the chicken was my job. I was the family chicken killer. It just wasn't economically feasible to call the vet for a sick chicken. When, after 2 or 3 years, the hens stopped the egg production, we didn't retire them. My dad knew a freelance butcher, and they probably ended up in soup. Recently, it occurred to me that in the eyes of the corporations and their owned politicians, we are livestock, nothing more, which is why they don't support health care. Larry. Yeah, I think you're right. So anyway, sometime this week, I've heard predictions of Friday, the final vote on what is being sold to the American public as health care reform, health insurance reform. The final vote will be taken by the House. I guess somebody, not me, but somebody can still make the argument that 1/1,000,000th of a loaf is better than no loaf at all. But I'm left with that question, and it's really driving me crazy. How could everybody in this country conspire, with the exception of people like Kucinich, and, you know, I always exempt a handful in the legislative process. How could everybody else, though, the vast, vast majority, the 99.9% who have conspired to deny the American people comprehensive, single-payer health care? How could that have happened, and why? Is it just because the obvious, that predatory capitalism has taken over our system? That's what I think. And it's not just a health industrial complex, or the medical industrial complex, I should say. It's not anything about health at all. But the medical industrial complex is not just them. It's all these other filthy corporate predator bastards. And I just wonder why we don't, as a nation, rise up and cleanse ourselves of these sons of bitches and replace them with a healthcare system that makes sense. It makes sense for just about every other civilized country on earth. Not that any of us are civilized. Look at our foreign policies and our pollution policies and our climate change policies, but you know what I'm saying. I'm just talking loosely here when I say civilized countries. But we won't even do that. We won't even do that. I don't understand that. It's probably a good thing I don't, because if I did understand it completely, I would probably just fold my tent and slip into the darkness. Texas Board of Education has cut Thomas Jefferson out of the textbooks. You know why? Because Jefferson, while he might have been a deist, thought Christianity sucked and made it clear that he thought Christianity sucked. So the Texas Board of Education meeting this week to revise its social studies curriculum has decided that Thomas Jefferson can kiss their asses. He's gone. So the Texas Board of Education has decided that Thomas Jefferson and his insistence that Christianity was nonsense. They have replaced him with religious right icon John Calvin, who believed in beating Jesus into reluctant recipients. Just beat the sons of bitches until they bleed and Jesus will seep in through the wounds. Texas Board of Education also, in a decision to avoid exposing students to, quote, this is a quote, transvestites, transsexuals, and who knows what else, end quote, the Texas Board of Education struck the curriculum's reference to, quote, sex and gender as social constructs, end quote, which they are. Take a look at history. I mean, big history. Not the history of last year's American Idol winner. I mean, big history. The Board of Education in Texas refused to require that, quote, students learn that the Constitution prevents the U.S. government from promoting one religion over all others, end quote. You see, the Texas Board of Education is manned and womaned by Christian sons of bitches, Christian Nazis, who believe that the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment is so much garbage. The Texas Board of Education wants the students to understand that Jesus discovered America. And Jesus wants all the Jews and all the Muslims and all the Baha'is and all the atheists and all the Wiccans silenced forever. The Texas Board of Education struck the word democratic, small d, from the description of the U.S. government and replaced it with the term constitutional republic. Because to use the term democratic, small d, might give these innocent little kids in Texas the wrong idea. You know, democratic. And what happens in Texas rarely stays in Texas where it concerns school textbooks, right? The school board also will insist that the superiority of American capitalism be stressed. Now, what's American capitalism? It is predatory, vicious, take no prisoners. I will kill your goddamn ass if I know there's a quarter in your purse in order to get it. That's what the Texas Board of Education wants the children to learn there. The Texas Board of Education is insisting that textbooks question the Founding Fathers' commitment to a purely secular government. In other words, there must have been a mistake. That's the reason they got rid of Jefferson. Jefferson, for Christ's sake. Wasn't he the author of the Declaration of Independence? The vote on all this was 10-5 along party lines. All the Republicans on the board voted to eliminate education from the Texas education system. Destroy it. Replace it with right-wing Christian nonsense propaganda. Incredible. Since January, Republicans on the board have passed more than 100 amendments to the 120-page curriculum standards affecting history, sociology, and economics courses from elementary to high school. The original standards were proposed by a panel of teachers. Teachers. The Texas school board is made up of, I don't think there are any teachers, are there? Who's on the Texas school board? Where is it? I think there's a barber. I think there's a couple of lawyers. Oh, and Darwinism or natural selection or evolution, whatever you want to call it, gone. Efforts by Hispanic board members to include more Latino figures as role models for the state's large Hispanic population were consistently defeated. That prompted one member, Mary Helen Berlanga, a Democrat, to storm out of a meeting last Thursday night saying, quote, they can just pretend this is a white America and Hispanics don't exist, end quote. She said they're going overboard. They're not experts. They're not historians. They're rewriting history, not only of Texas, but of the United States and the world, end quote. Now, the curriculum standards will be published in the State Register and opening. That'll open them up for 30 days of public comment. A final vote will be taken in May, but given the Republican dominance on the board, it's unlikely any changes will be made. Unbelievable stuff, huh? So, I don't care where you live in the United States. If you're listening outside of this country, you're safe. But if you're listening in the United States, what happens in Texas, where it concerns school textbooks, never stays in Texas. This is the Malloy program regarding what is going on with the Texas Board of Education and what sick, twisted sons of bitches those people really are. I mean, there's no other way to describe the members of the Texas Board of Education, at least the majority, the ones that are voting for this nonsense. George in Oregon writes, Mike, what's happening in Texas is exactly what Stalin did when he rewrote Russian history in the textbooks of the old Soviet Union. 1,000 years of Russian history disappeared under the heels of the jackboots of the, quote, glorious revolution, end quote. Expect to see pictures of the founding fathers with Jefferson airbrushed out. The Soviets did that too. Bukharin and Trotsky, a couple of the early revolutionaries who fell into disfavor and later were murdered, mysteriously disappeared in photos that they had earlier been in when those photos showed up in later publications. What a travesty when an entire state comes under the control of ignorant religious fanatics. The really sad part is that they'll probably get away with it. George in Oregon. Oh, sure they will, because the right-wing noise machine in this country will congratulate the Texas Board of Education. Will tell them that they are working to restore sanity in this country and to rip our deteriorating system out of the hands of the liberals who are murdering the United States of America. Man. I don't know. Now, it's not just the state of Texas. Homeschoolers, there is a publishing company, Apologia Educational Ministries, which provides a lot of homeschool courses. It is, among other things, eliminating most science, certainly Darwin's theories. And in a recent article at by the AP, it mentions that Christian-based materials dominate a growing homeschool education market that currently encompasses more than 1.5 million students in the United States. And for most of these homeschool parents, a Bible-based version of the Earth's creation is exactly what they want. Federal statistics over the past couple of years show that 83% of homeschooling parents want to give their children religious education. A spokesman for the Homeschool Legal Defense Association says, quote, the majority of homeschoolers self-identify as evangelical Christians. Most homeschoolers will definitely have a sort of creationist component to their homeschool program. Man, it's just unbelievable, isn't it? I don't know whether to laugh or cry. I guess cry, or laugh. I don't know, or both. Anyway, the latest from the crazy people in the teabag movement is a story about Virginia Thomas. She is the wife of Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas. And she's setting up a teabagger nonprofit group. Now, this will be interesting because the teabaggers are essentially racist. And how they're going to deal with a very dark Clarence Thomas and a very white Virginia Thomas setting up a subdivision of their crazed teabagger party, how they're going to deal with that will be great fun to watch. Now, Clarence Thomas has always kind of adopted the attitude of the House Negro, so perhaps he'll do it this time also. Clarence Thomas, in all the years he's been on the United States Supreme Court, I don't think has ever, ever written an opinion that became the rule of the court. He has never been the lead author. I don't think he's even spoken for the past 6 years. He just looks at fat Tony Scalia. And if Fat Tony farts, Uncle Clarence farts. If Fat Tony burps, Uncle Clarence burps. This is a guy that George Herbert Walker Bush said was the most qualified man in America to be on the Supreme Court. Anyway, Clarence and Virginia went to the Conservative Political Action Conference a couple of months ago. You remember that, right? And there was a picture, the AP had a picture, or UPI had a picture of these two clowns sitting there. But Virginia Thomas now tells the story of her involvement in the teabagger movement. And she claims it's the tale of an average citizen in action. Here's what she says, quote, I'm an ordinary citizen from Omaha, Nebraska, who just may have the chance to preserve liberty along with you and other people like you, she said in a recent panel discussion with teabaggers in Washington. Virginia went on to count herself among those energized into action by President Obama's, quote, hard left agenda, end quote. You ignorant son of a bitch. Hard left agenda. Oh, my God. Now, there's nothing wrong, I guess, with the wife of a Supreme Court justice, even one as vile as Clarence Thomas, launching a teabag-linked group that could test the traditional notions of political impartiality for the court, right? So, a few weeks back, Virginia Thomas created Liberty Central Incorporated. a lobbying group whose website will organize activism around a set of what she calls conservative core principles. And what would that be, Ms. Justice Thomas? Huh? The group plans to issue report cards for Congress members, and they plan on being involved in the November election, although Virginia Thomas would not specify how. She said it would accept donations from various sources, her new Liberty Central, including corporations, as allowed under the campaign finance rules recently decided by the Supreme Court, her husband being one of the right-wing Nazis who made the decision. See how quickly this works? The wife of a goddamn filthy Supreme Court Nazi justice of the United States, taking advantage of her husband's decision. Well, not his decision. He just sucks along whatever Tony Scalia tells him to do. He does. But here she is, Virginia Thomas. Oh, my God. Ginny, that's the name she goes by, said on the panel at the Conservative Political Action Conference, quote, "I adore all the new citizen patriots who are rising up across this country. I have felt called to the front lines with you, with my fellow citizens, to preserve what made America great." Man. This has never happened before, of course, where the wife of a Supreme Court justice, and I say wife because most of them have been males, has decided to do something this insane. Ginny declined to comment in detail about her plans for Liberty Central, Inc., which she said would fully launch in May. And she wouldn't answer questions about whether she and her husband had discussed the effects her role might have on perceptions of him, his impartiality. Further, she wouldn't answer whether or not they discussed this before Uncle Clarence join the Nazi majority in deciding that corporations can make unlimited contributions to political campaigns. Don't hear a thing when our history unfolds before you. Wasn't that Forrest Gump's girlfriend, Ginny? Anyway, Ginny Thomas, Clarence Thomas's wife, has taken upon herself to become a teabagger. However you want to interpret that, I don't care. But the odd part is she's in for a big surprise when the inherently racist nature of the teabagger movement slams her in the face. She's a very, 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 very white Omaha, Nebraska woman married to a very, 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 very black South Georgia man. And when the pictures of the two of them together get out, you can almost hear the squealing right now from the real teabaggers. This will be fun. So she set up something called Liberty Central Incorporated. Liberty Central Incorporated. And as the L.A. Times article I'm quoting from says, although Liberty Central claims to be a nonpartisan group, its website shows an affinity for conservative principles. Her biography notes that she is a fan of Rush Limbaugh and Mark Levin, author of Men in Black, How the Supreme Court is Destroying America. The bio also says, quote, she's intrigued by Glenn Beck and listening carefully. As in her appearances at the conservative political circle jerk conference, the website doesn't mention Clarence Thomas. Now, the judicial code of conduct does require judges to separate themselves from their spouse's political activity. As a result, Marjorie Rendell, a judge on the 3rd U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, has stayed away from political events, campaign rallies, and debates in Pennsylvania. Her husband discussed such issues in his first campaign for governor. And since then, Judge Rendell has sought the opinion of the Judiciary's Committee on Codes of Conduct when a case presents a possible conflict of interest involving her husband's political office. Law professor, did I not quote him the first time? A law professor said that Justice Thomas, too, should be on alert for possible conflicts, particularly those involving donors to his wife's nonprofit. The law professor said, quote, there is opportunity for mischief in a company with a case before the court, or which it wants the court to accept when it makes a substantial contribution to Liberty Central in the interim, end quote. Opportunity for mischief? Oh, please. L.A. Times says Justice Thomas would be required to be aware of such contributions, and Justice Thomas should then disclose those facts and allow parties in the case to argue for his recusal. But it would be up to Justice Thomas to decide whether to recuse himself. As a 501c4 nonprofit, Liberty Central can raise unlimited amounts of corporate money and avoid disclosing its donors. Nice, huh? Ginny Thomas. Wow. Just keeps getting worse and worse. Rick in San Francisco writes, please don't call Virginia Thomas ignorant. She's far from ignorant. She and her husband know exactly what they're saying and doing. They don't believe any of it, but they know that it will forward the agenda of the far right, which will reward their service well. They're not ignorant. They're evil. Rick in San Francisco. Man, oh man, oh man, oh man. Well, I don't know. Did you see anything on the news tonight about Justice Clarence Thomas's wife setting up a, so soon after her husband joined with the other four Nazis on the Supreme Court to declare corporations the same as humans when it comes to campaign contributions? Well, advocacy contributions. And therefore, Virginia Thomas puts herself directly in conflict with the idea that a Supreme Court justice being the final arbiter of what is and is not constitutional. She puts herself right in the firing line between her husband and neo-Nazism, but of course they're one and the same, so I guess it really doesn't matter, does it? All right, when we come back, something Bob sent me today I'll share with you. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy. Isn't it time maybe to begin thinking about impeaching Clarence Long Dong Silver Thomas?
dissent, it's not America. Here's Mike Malloy.
Do you know how anachronistic that little liner sounds? Without dissent, it's not America. I guess all that was true back when you cut those. When did you cut those? About 5 years ago? A long time ago. 25 before the hour. And I think it's time once again for... There's that music. God, I love that. Time for another moment with Bob. Brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. Tonight's subject, the Newsweek cover obscenity, second week in a row. Bob writes, "Hi Mike, I've never confused the incoherent paranoid ramblings of Glenn Beck with the thoughtful commentary of Bill Moyers, Limbaugh, O'Reilly, Hannity, and all the rest lie their collective asses off every time they're in front of a microphone, and you, Hartman, and Maddow don't. I know the difference between Newsweek and The Nation. But Newsweek bugs the hell out of me because they're just another example of the grand perversion we endure when so many of our institutions claim to be one thing but are in actuality the opposite. Newsweek's cover photo last week, you'll remember, was George W. Bush strutting off camera on the deck of the USS Abraham Lincoln with the Mission Accomplished banner in the background. The title in huge black uppercase letters read, Victory at Last, the Emergence of a Democratic Iraq, as if the horror the Bush regime unleashed was in any way worth the emergence of a shaky puppet government pretending to be founded upon the principles of democracy. Unbelievable. This week's cover is another astounding collective slap in the face to what should be our most valued profession. And then Bob includes a picture of the cover of Newsweek, and it says, we must fire bad teachers. We must fire bad teachers, you know, like in chalkboard writing. We must fire bad teachers. We must fire bad teachers. In the middle, The Key to Saving American Education by Evan Thomas and Pat Wingert. And 10 or 10, 12 times here on the cover, we must fire bad teachers. You know, written in seventh grade script on a blackboard. Bob writes, we all know the cliche, Bart Simpson's punishment is to write something 100 times on the blackboard after school. Newsweek's cover photo is a blackboard with the same sentence written over and over again. We must fire bad teachers. Inside the magazine, the article begins, why we must fire bad teachers. In no other profession are workers so insulated from accountability. Once again, Newsweek has joined the ranks of Limbaugh, O'Reilly, Hannity, and Beck by sinking to the depths of their madness and lies to sell absolute junk. This one sentence alone, in no other profession are workers so insulated from accountability, is enough to cause any thinking person's head to explode after a severe bout of projectile vomiting. We have endured a complete absence of accountability throughout the 8 long years of the Bush regime. The attacks on September 11th, 2 illegal wars, a multi-trillion dollar worldwide financial meltdown caused by the Bush administration and Wall Street institutions too big to fail, and to date, no one has been held accountable. But according to the writers for Newsweek, Evan Thomas and Pat Wingert, in regards to the teaching vocation, quote, in no other profession are workers so insulated from accountability, end quote. It is impossible to respond to that without violating the FCC's obscenity laws, which is insane. Newsweek can legally publish this obscene lie, but it is against the law to accurately describe that sentence as absolute bullshit. Nowhere in the article do the authors address how to actually save our educational system. After writing about four absolutely awful teachers, they end on this note, quote, at the time the story ran last summer, all four teachers still had active teaching licenses. Well, these horror stories are sensational. What's also disturbing is the immunity enjoyed by the thousands of teachers who let down their students in more ordinary ways. Many more teachers are overworked, underpaid, and underappreciated. Maybe they'd get more respect if the truly bad teachers were let go. Maybe they'd get more respect if the truly bad teachers were let go. Absolute gibberish. Maybe teachers would get more respect if they were paid a decent salary and didn't have to use textbooks whose content needs to be approved by crazy Christian conservatives in Texas. There are only a few jobs that are indispensable in order to have a decent functioning society. I immediately thought of two. The second one doesn't really demand any skill whatsoever. When I was a kid, we called them garbage men. Maybe they're called sanitation engineers or something else today, but regardless, somebody has to take the garbage out regularly. The first indispensable job is teaching. It demands a whole toolbox of skills to do it right, and it is critical for the survival of all of us that we have good teachers everywhere. Newsweek's message is to blame the most people. Newsweek's message is to blame most the people we should reward. The grand perversion strikes again. Well, as long as my parents' Newsweek subscription comes to our home, I will make good use of it. If only it came in a larger format, then it would be easier to cover the bottom of the parrot's cage. Regards, Bob. And thus, another moment with Bob, brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling, who just love Bob to pieces. A couple of program notes. Tomorrow, 10:30 Eastern Time, where are we? Here we are. Tomorrow at 10:30 Eastern Time, I'm going to join David Schuster again on MSNBC. So tune in if you're awake. 10:30 tomorrow morning. And also, for a couple hours today, Kathy was working with this video streaming camera that we've attached here in the studio. Am I supposed to announce this or not? Oh, I'm not supposed to. Never mind. Okay, video streaming hopefully will be coming soon. So, note here from Irish Dave on Uncle Clarence. Thomas has one child, Jamal Adin, from his first marriage. This marriage to college sweetheart Kathy Grace Ambush lasted from 1971 until their 1981 separation and 1984 divorce. In 1987, Clarence Thomas married Virginia Lamp, a lobbyist, aide to Congressman Dick Armey, and subsequently an executive director at the Conservative Heritage Foundation. In 1997, they took in one of Thomas's great nephews. Since joining the Supreme Court, Clarence Thomas requested an annulment of his first marriage from the Roman Catholic Church, which was granted. He was reconciled to the church in the mid-1990s and remains a practicing Catholic. Thomas is one of six Catholics currently on the court. If his marriage was annulled, doesn't that make his son Jamal a bastard? I don't know. And you gotta wonder what rank Virginia Thomas held when she was in the Dick Army. Irish Dave sends it in. Yeah, how do Catholics do that? I know other Catholics who will be married for extended periods of time, may or may not have children, and when they decide to get a divorce, which is expressly banned by the Catholic Church, they just have it annulled. And the children become what? Illegitimate? I have no idea. Maybe somebody can send me a quick email about that. What happens to the children of a Catholic marriage when the Catholic parents decide to get a Catholic divorce, which is an annulment. What are those children considered? Bastards? Illegitimate? I mean, it can't be both. I mean, the marriage can't be declared never to have occurred and the child remain legitimate. I mean, the Catholic Church is brutal, isn't it? It's a sick nest of son of a bitches who are just, have you been following? I've got it on the rundown here tonight about what the Catholic Church, what they're discovering in Europe about the pedophilia that the Nazi Pope, when he was Cardinal Ratzinger or Bishop Ratzinger, what he allowed, if not encouraged. Isn't it time for the Nazi Pope to resign? I hope he stays right where it is, frankly. I mean, this whole thing is such a goddamn farce. It's just insane. I'm sure Uncle Clarence and Sammy the Fish Alito and the rest of the good practicing Catholics on the Supreme Court will figure out a way to either defend or ignore what is developing into the worst church scandal in at least a millennium and a half, wouldn't you think?
Truth seekers, gather round the campfire. It's more Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour, Diane in Pittsburgh writes, Mike, I'm a recovering Catholic and never understood this annulment thing and always wondered about the children of these marriages and their resulting status. I do know that to get an annulment, it takes one important thing. Money. Prairie 2 writes in regarding Virginia Thomas, Clarence Thomas's wife. Prairie 2 writes, Miss Thomas has no intention of or need to attract even one teabagger to her incorporated special interest group or in any way influence them. She need not say anything controversial or try to influence public policy or the court. Money will flow from the corporations, as you said, undisclosed, and no staff will be needed except to cut the seven-figure paychecks and provide perks, you know, corporate jets, gold-plated office, for the CEO and her spouse. Yeah, why would you want to associate yourself with a bunch of losers like the teabaggers, right? Tom and Joshua Tree writes, remember the Alamo? He even rewrote that. It had nothing to do with Lone Star Courage and the liberties of Americans. He's writing regarding the Texas school book controversy. It was because it was the territory of Mexico. And Mexico outlawed slavery. And that so infuriated the good, noble, and upright white Texans that they took to arms in defense of their thirst for slaves. They haven't stopped. The earlier writer is correct. We're all livestock and chattel to these creatures. And this textbook agenda is just another roundup. So how do we get through to these ego-clad throwbacks? Wars do no good. They have no hearts and will not die. They're immune to education. And any attempt to tap on the shell of these gruesome sludge dwellers, no matter how sweet, truthful, or gentle, is perceived as a life-threatening cause for ever more hatred, lies, and violence. So how do we break through to them? Even if it's to save our own skins, our own souls, our own future, both as a nation and a people. How? Tom in Joshua Tree, California. P.S. Those corporations are not now the same as humans. They are superhumans. Their voices are louder, longer, undying, and ever-present. Yes, they have all the rights of humans, but none of the responsibilities of humans, nor shall they obey any laws that would otherwise constrict or control humans. Nor are they restricted to a mere one person, one vote, when it is they who determine who runs for office and by how many votes they shall win. No, they're not humans. They feed on humans. And the humans? they all go, bah, bah, bah. God, you people are kind of weird tonight. Jeanette writes, ack, I feel sick. Probably Texas flu compounded with Alaskan plague. Increasingly, I wish my state would secede to Canada. But boy, oh boy, we're going to have the AMC pacer of healthcare reform. So that ought to cover whatever's making me nauseous, right? I can't take credit for the pacer analogy. Michael Moore said it on Countdown tonight. He also said that for the first 4 years, the ban on pre-existing conditions applies only to kids. Funny. I hadn't heard our corporatist president mention that little detail. This week I'm going to watch Capitalism, a Love Story, which I saw in theaters, in a theater, and I'm not, and if I'm not too psychotic after that, Sicko, which I've never seen. I've avoided Sicko because I worry I'll get so angry that, as you often say, oh, never mind. Rock on, Mike. Jeanette. Is that, yeah, Michael Moore was on Countdown tonight. He said the first, he said this health reform is the AMC Pacer of healthcare. Remember those cars? Oh, my God. AMC. Remember that company? No. And this, this just in, California's budget crisis could cost nearly 22,000 teachers their jobs this year. State school districts had issued 21,905 pink slips to teachers and other school employees Monday. Today, the legal deadline for districts to send preliminary layoff notices. Last year, 60% of the 26,000 teachers who received pink slips ended up losing their jobs. Good God. State Superintendent of Public Instruction Jack O'Connell expected this year's actual job losses to be high, given the state's persistent budget problems and the smaller pool of education stimulus money available from the federal government. The superintendent said, quote, these layoffs would be devastating to our schools, would harm our communities, and would harm our education delivery system, end quote. California schools now rank at or near the bottom nationally in academic performance, student-teacher ratios in middle and high school, access to guidance counselors, and the percentage of seniors who go directly to four-year colleges. According to a 2009 report by the Institute for Democracy, Education, and Access at the University of California, Los Angeles. Good Lord. Near the bottom, California? They used to be the gold standard of education, didn't they? A spokesman for Arnold Schwarzenegger said that claims that education funding will be reduced are false. Oh, man. That's astonishing. This was in the Chronicle, by the way. 22,000 teachers could lose their jobs in California this year. And the state of California ranks near the bottom. I thought only the states in the South vied for the bottom slot. You know, Texas, Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, South Carolina, Virginia, Tennessee, Kentucky, Arkansas. We'll be back after the break. We might even take some phone calls. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy program. a lot of responses here. I'll just pick a couple on the question that I had about what happens to the kids in a divorce, Catholic divorce. Reg writes, does an annulment mean there was no marriage? Divorced persons firmly believe they were married since that was their sincere intention and they have a legally recognized certificate to prove it. Some call this a natural marriage, but it was judged not to be a sacramental marriage as defined by the canons of the Catholic Church. Thus, an annulment has no effect on the legitimacy of children. Children born to a marriage recognized in civil law are classified as legitimate. Both civil law and canon law in the Catholic Church agree on this question. Well, if that's the case, then if the Church is recognizing a specific approval by the civil court that a marriage did occur, even though the Catholic Church says one didn't, then why doesn't the Catholic Church get its goddamn face out of gay marriage? I mean, if the Church recognizes civil law and canon law and that the two are separate, I mean, I don't know very many gay folk who would like a sacramental marriage as defined by the Catholic Church. I think they just want a marriage. Hypocritical sons of bitches, every single one of these asshat-wearing freaks. Yeah. Mark in Prairie du Sac, Wisconsin writes, Mike, I wonder how long it would be before the fatherless children of whores, no disrespect to sex workers or bastards, excise George Washington. Oh, he's talking about the Texas school board. When they hear that he spoke of his hope, Washington's hope, that the United States would always be, quote, a bastion of liberality, end quote. The morons don't even know they're Calvin either. John Calvin probably would find most of them to be apostates with their born-again exceptionalism that he'd have seen as an affront to his predestination doctrine and cheerfully have them burned at the stake. These creeps probably fantasize about throwing the rest of us on the pyre when they are burning books. Didn't the Nazis do that too? I wouldn't be surprised if many approve of the roasting of 6 million Jews and assorted other undesirables, you know, gays, liberals, trade unionists, gypsies, true Christians that the Nazis eradicated along with the knowledge in those books. They probably would say that the Nazis understood, as they do, that society must be kept pure. And after all, they are the elect of God, and all is pre-forgiven. Please let there be a God, and may she give them one hell of a shock when they show up at her throne. Sorry, Mark. From Eileen in Minneapolis, Mike, I remember you read 1984 on the air. I really enjoyed that, and I think perhaps you might consider reading it one more time. Those bastards in Texas are rewriting history. The Republicans are also lying so much that perhaps we, the American people, are soon to believe it. This is so reminiscent of the Orwellian era coming true. As I was very afraid after reading that book, I am even more afraid to live it. Are we to believe that we are fighting Iraq, Eurasia, and then before you know it, it would be Iran, Oceania. I would not be surprised if Dick Cheney was modeling himself as Big Brother, the torturer, and even took pleasure in it. Do you really think he accidentally shot that guy in the face? I believe he said something good old Dick did not like and therefore had to be punished. There are countless examples of 1984 coming true, even during the Obama administration. But I think it's time we expose these fools for who they really are. I'm sure we can match a character in the book to every public figure put in front of us. Eileen, Minneapolis. And Jason in Newcastle, Washington writes, Mike, what profession in this country has disgraced itself more than the lying asshats formerly known as journalists who infest the corrupt corporate media? I would add the professional journalist to Bob Alexander's list of absolutely necessary jobs, at least if one would like to live in a functioning democracy. Yeah, what about what about accountability on the journalists, Mr. President? What about them, huh? And this from Steve the banker. Mike, questions from a citizen of the Republic, me. One, I'd like to have all deposits and bank accounts and proof of all bank transactions of all Supreme Court justices who voted for the latest ruling concerning election donations by corporations. Two, I'd like to audit all transactions of all deposits of all accounts outside the U.S. by all justices during the past 12 months concerning those five justices. Three, I'd like to audit all phone, email, and other communications between the five justices who voted against the citizens and four corporations to review collusion and conflict of interest. And four, I'd like to see all the records of gifts to the justices during the past 12 months. Mike, I have been a banker for 30 years, and I know, since the Patriot Act, that these records are actually possible to retrieve easily, since they are retrieved on ordinary citizens every day. Steve the banker, P.S. Where's Judge Sirica? Where's Peter Rodino? Where are the champions of the Constitution? Well, they're dead. They're dead. Did it, did it, did it. Ah, yes. All right, are we ready to... We ready to take some phone calls, you think? And you know, the article I was reading in the current issue of The Nation, don't have it right in front of me, or I'd share some of it with you. The crisis of global climate change that is being, the reality of which is being exacerbated by these so-called non-government organizations that claim to be green. You know the ones I'm talking about, Nature Conservancy and all these other groups who have worked out deals with the corporate polluters. That story just won't get legs, will it? I guess it's like the Germans in the 30s and 40s when they knew the Jews were being rounded up. In the 30s, they knew the ghettos were being surrounded. They knew that within a matter of days, weeks, or months, that the Jews would be taken to death camps. And yet they were able to hide behind deniability and avoidance. Avoidance and denial. And then in the 40s, when the death camps really started operating at full capacity, and the people in the villages surrounding these death camps knew full well what was going on, and yet they just couldn't face it. If you remember some of the films from immediately after liberation of the death camps, when the people from the villages in Poland and Germany that were adjacent to these camps, when the people were brought in by the Allies to take a look at the huge piles of decimated and desiccated bodies lying in these mass graves, and were forced to walk into the buildings where the ovens were to look at the remains of the burned Jews, and how the people that came in, the Poles and the Germans who came in, had this look of shock. They it was just like they couldn't believe it. And I think that's probably where we are in this country, where it concerns the death, not to make a comparison to the Holocaust, but the inability of people to understand that the planet is going to end. Unless, and the window is closing, and it's just going to end unless we get an absolute grip on global climate change.
Thank you.
Redefining Anger Management. It's Mike Malloy.
It's 21 past the hour. What else we got here? Don't know. So let's do this. Arnold is in Durham, North Carolina. Hey, Arnold.
Hey, Michael.
Hey.
How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm doing great. You talk about one of my favorite subject matter, Clarence Uncle Thomas. You know, like black people, you said something about being the gold standard.
Yeah.
You talk about education, but he's the Republicans or the right wing's gold standard of how Negroes should act in this country or should be. He is, but you know, black people constantly, year after year, rejects this man. Not because he's mute and can't talk. The only thing he knows how to say is, y'all, sir, and no, sir, boss. It's the fact that, you know, we call him like, shoe shine, handkerchief head, or quite naturally, Uncle Thomas, because his name is Thomas. And I think the best one we call him is Picnic Shoulder. You know what I mean?
Call him what?
Picnic Shoulder. Well, that goes back in time.
Wait
back
a minute.
Doing.
Picnic Shoulder?
Yeah, it goes back in time, like back long before the Texas school system kind of eliminated this from history. Back in the slavery days, on those big plantations down in the South, the slaves, when it came down to getting their fair share of all the crops that were harvested, mm-hmm. back during the hog killing time, when they killed the hogs and butchered the hogs,
mm-hmm.
well, the white folks filled their smokehouses up with all the choice meat,
right.
and the blacks would get the head, the feet, all the entrails and guts they can carry away,
yeah.
the tail, and the house negro, got the shoulder. That's what you call it, the front, where the front leg coming to the body. They call that the picnic shoulder.
The picnic shoulder.
It didn't have all the choice meat on it, but it had the best meat, and he got the best of the best. You see what I'm saying?
I see. I wonder why. See, this is the thing. If white people understood some of this stuff, you know, you ought to share some of this once in a while, yeah. Arnold.
It's kind of like, you know, when the black people come get their part of the hall, it was kind of like the school voucher program that they try to slam on people, you know what I mean? Yeah, come on, get your chitlins and your tails and your pig feet.
Right.
And you worked hard on my plantation. I'm going to put all my good meat in the smokehouse.
Oh, my God. Well, you know, Clarence Thomas, and I got permission. Somebody gave me, one of my friends, a black friend of mine, said, you can go ahead and call him Uncle Clarence, but you have to be careful, Malloy. You're not allowed to use Uncle Tom unless, you know, you're given specific permission, because that's one of our phrases. And I said, okay. But he said, you can say Uncle Clarence if you want to. Is that right? I can do that, right?
Well, Michael, you got my permission to call him Handkerchief Head. That's my favorite one.
Now, where does that come from?
You know,
because I've heard that forever. Where does that come from?
And you see him. They had their handkerchief tied on their head to keep the sweat back. But that's because he worked so hard to make sure Mr. Charlie Carr was all clean and shiny. You know, and we call him Handkerchief Head. You know,
I got you.
Yes, sir, boss. Hey, one more thing, Mike, before I let you go.
Sure.
That wormy, smirmy, Graham from South Carolina.
Right.
Well, I'm saying, he come up and said something about some trash, like, you know, the Democrats they're gonna really pay for that, some kind of, where they gonna, you know, reconciliation.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Right.
And those people, man, when they took control of both houses, they used reconciliation to do anything.
Oh, sure.
To start a barbecue grill if they could, you know? I mean, it's just ridiculous.
It's insane. All right. Listen, thanks for all the information, Arnold. Let me, you know, fill us in a little bit more, because y'all have a bunch of secrets on your side. And, you know, I want to know about some of those secrets, all right?
All right. As parents would say, Yaffa. I see you, Mike.
All right. Thanks for checking in, Arnold. There, Kathy, your witness. I have permission from two African Americans now to say Uncle Clarence.
I like pork shoulder. I buy that and make barbecue. I like the picnic. I guess that makes me a house worker.
You are so white.
I'm very white.
You are so white.
Currently, we have had such a long winter. I'm especially white.
You are the whitest white woman I've ever met.
In the South, and I do know what he was saying. He calls him handkerchief head. I thought they called him do rags.
No. That's something different.
Wait a minute.
Don't try.
I'm sorry.
Don't try.
Probably shouldn't say.
No.
I always thought that had something to do with Jerry Springer.
No. It had nothing to. You're the whitest white woman I have ever met, I swear to God.
Jerry Seinfeld?
No, Jerry Curls has nothing to do with those people.
No Jewish man.
No, it had nothing to do. Oh, my God. Get us into commercials quick, all right? Oh, we'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. This is the Malloy program. Yeah, I'll be on MSNBC tomorrow morning at 10:30 along with who's this little freak? Oh, that's right. Armstrong Williams, Uncle Armstrong Williams, right? a right winger like Clarence Thomas, and I guess our topic is going to be health care reform, health insurance reform. It's not health care. Armstrong Williams is, I don't know, he's such a punk. He really is. He's the one that was caught accepting. How much money did he accept, Kathy? Several hundred thousand dollars to incorporate into his radio program talking points from No Child Left Behind?
Alex, I'll take payola for $250,000, please.
Yeah, $250,000, is that what it was? So that's the best they could do, is come up with this guy? All right, that's cool. So that'll be tomorrow at 10:30 Eastern Time if you want to tune in and watch the fun of frivolity. What a freak he is. Oh, my God. Armstrong Williams. Oh, well. Where are we? We're right here. Bruce is in Santa Paula. Is that right?
That's correct, Mike.
Santa Paula. I haven't heard of that. California. Listening on KTLK.
It's not real big.
Oh, okay.
Been a while since I talked to you, Mike. I called because you were talking. I was listening to K-Talk coming in from visiting my mom, and you were talking about health care.
Right.
And it's ironic that you were talking about the cost of medical things, because while I was visiting her, she handed me a bill, a medical bill from Children's Hospital Society for me from February 25th, 1958, for $3.
Oh, my God.
I've got the bill in my hand. I'm looking at it. But in fairness, it says at the bottom, the Children's Hospital is a charitable nonprofit organization.
Uh-huh.
Does
it say what the $3 covered?
No, it just says description DIST. I don't know what that is. I do remember at that time that I broke my leg. I got run over twice in a week by cars because I was kind of a klutz. twice in 8 days, man.
God.
I was ill on my bicycle, but and my parents too, I guess. But you know, when I saw this bill, and then you're talking about it, and I thought to myself, I mean, this is so old, there wasn't any zip code. It was Los Angeles 27, California.
Yeah, right. I remember
yeah,
those days, yeah.
And the telephone number is Normandy 3, you know. So, you know, it's really like really antique. It's on this yellowed paper. And,
right.
You know, but it's just so telling, I guess, mm-hmm. because if you think that 3-cent stamps or at that time, postage stamps are now like 45 cents.
Right.
So $3 would be worth $45 if you want to use that as the reference point.
Probably even worse than that, but yeah.
So I just I thought I'd share it with you because it was so hilarious to see it, and I had to fax it to you. You know, if you got a fax number, I'll send it to you.
Actually, I don't here. I wish you could scan it and email it, but that's cool. $3.
Yeah, I can scan and email it to you if you take attachments. So.
Oh, yeah, yes. I'd love to see it. I'd love to see it.
I'll send it off to you so you can check it out.
All right, Bruce, thanks.
Hey, good talking to you, Mike.
All right, appreciate you checking in. Take care. Yeah, health insurance. Oh, Bruce brought it up. When I was 12, my mother had a health insurance policy, individual policy, through Blue Cross Blue Shield of Ohio. And the Blue Cross was for doctor visits, I think, and the Blue Shield was for hospital. Well, none of us ever had hospitalizations. And my brother Danny kept getting colds, sinus infections, sore throats. So my mother took him to the doctor, not a pediatrician, just a doctor. And he examined Dan, and he said to my mother, well, he's got tonsillitis. He needs to have his tonsils up. And my mother said, how much is that going to cost? And he said, well, with your insurance, it's probably going to cost about $30. And Sylvia said, my mother said, can you do all four of them? Because she had four kids. Not four tonsils, all four kids. And the doctor said, sure, you know, we can do that. Now, the weird part was that my other brother and sister and I, we never had any tonsil problems. It was Danny. But they took all four of us in. And I think the total bill, including everything, including an overnight stay in the hospital, was like $110, I think, for all four of us to have tonsillectomies. And when I think about what that would cost now, I mean, I don't even know. I don't know what tonsillectomies cost. A couple of thousand? You don't know either. I don't either. I have no idea what a tonsillectomy would cost. But Blue Cross Blue Shield. And at the time, my mother was working as a waitress. I don't think my dad was working at the time. And as a waitress, she was able, you know, I can remember her writing the checks for the premiums, and not checks, and money. Well, yeah, she had a checking account. I was going to say money orders, but I think she had a checking account. And she would write checks, and if I remember right, the premiums were something like $6 or $7 a month. Does that sound right, Kathy? Yeah, that sounds about right. Weird. So there you go. There's another back in the day medical story. Good Lord. John is in Diamond Bar, California, listening on KTLK. Diamond Bar, never heard of that one either. Where's Diamond
Mike,
Bar?
Mike, I've called you before. I'm the lawyer in Diamond Bar, 30 miles east of L.A. But
oh, yeah, okay, I remember.
Remember the public option, the state compensation insurance fund in California for workers' comp, 94 years old, I was telling you about it.
Yeah.
Well, today I got my premium. $500, okay?
Yeah.
I figured it out. In 33 years of practicing law, I've paid about $15,000 in premium. They have paid approximately $300,000 in claims at the 20-to-1 ratio. Now you're thinking, now what kind of stupid insurance company can operate like that?
Right.
But this is the public option. There's no corporate profit. There's no high overhead. There's no stockholders.
Right, right.
I'm still paying $500 a year in premium when I've had, you know, 20 times the amount of money in claims.
But
it shows you it works.
But you're part of a huge pool.
Yeah, they have half the business in California because they're the most successful.
Your premium is $500 a month?
No, a year.
A year?
A year, Michael.
$40 a month?
Yeah. And they've paid out $300,000 in claims. I did the math.
Well,
in 33 years.
$10,000 a year to you?
Well, if you figure it out, if you know, over the years, some of the claims were bigger than others. But the point is, if you spread it out, it's a 20-to-1 ratio.
Sure.
And it shows you the public option or a nonprofit corporation is where we need to be with health insurance.
Now, what health insurance is this again, John?
It's workers' comp. Workers' compensation, which is primarily health care and disability benefits.
Right, right.
You can put them all together, but the point is, this nonsense about socialism, this nonsense about public options, this is where we need to be.
Mm. Yeah, I said earlier tonight, I just don't quite understand how the argument, and that's all it was, about healthcare reform was so skewed by these right-wing maniacs. And why the American public are so willing to allow this to continue. That article I read, I think it was from the L.A. Times, about $800,000 is what has been what is paid out annually to corporate health industrial complex. That's $800,000 that does not go for health insurance claims or health care. It goes into the pockets of everybody from the shareholders to the executives to all those people who work for these huge insurance companies whose sole function is to deny your claim.
Yeah,
you know.
And I have group insurance for everybody that works for me, Anthem Blue Cross, and we're getting killed with premiums, high deductibles. It's unbelievable. But then you look at the public option, which is workers' compensation in California, a 94-year-old company, and they're just like kicking butt. Because they're doing it the right way.
Mm-hmm. It's just it's astonishing to me. I have a hard time with all this, John. I really do.
So do I.
It's
and
madness.
I listen to your show and everything you say, I agree and I cheer. And what can I say? What are we going to do, Mike?
Nothing. Nothing. I don't know. Like I said, I've said several times. Bob Alexander's idea just. And not just his, but some other people who have said, look, you want to make the system stop? It goes back to Mario Savio.
Yeah.
You know, just you've got to refuse to cooperate with the machine at some point.
We need a little more civil disobedience.
I hear that. John, thanks, man.
Thank you.
All right, appreciate you checking in. We'll be right back.
Ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. Just a quick mention. When we had the cruise to Mexico all those years ago, was that was Nova N, that wasn't Air America. We met a lot of people on that cruise, a number of whom still stay in touch with us. And one of the couples we met was Karen and Jeff from Olympia, Washington, and nice couple. And Kathy told me that Karen was just an absolute fan of the program and was such a fan that 2 hours before she passed away of cancer about a week ago, she was still listening to the program. So I just wanted to mention, we just found out tonight about the passing of Karen. It's about 9 before the hour. Where are we here? Oh, it's too late to really start something new. But did you all ever see the movie, and there have been several versions of it, Night of the Living Dead, or The Return of the Night of the Living Dead, or Night of the Living Dead 2, or Night of the Living Dead Updated, whatever, whatever. Every time I see Newt Gingrich's name in the newspapers or media, I think about that. Well, Gingrich is back several times, but apparently Gingrich was in, according to the Times over the weekend, Gingrich was in Akron, Ohio, a couple of weeks ago, telling an audience of 300 people, that Barack Obama is out of touch. Why? Because, according to Gingrich, the president did not understand the gut-level appeal of the pickup truck at the center of the new senator from Massachusetts, Scott Brown's winning campaign, as he wrested the Senate seat away from the Democrats in that state. Gingrich said, quote, "What if I have to haul a moose? You cannot put a gun rack in the back of a smart car." End quote. What does that mean? Gingrich is, I don't know. He is, he's gotten wealthy. He's running the same scam that, that Sarah Palin is running on the terminally brain dead. Gingrich makes a lot of money in speaker's fees you know, to show up to hold seminars on the way to really, really, really successfully conduct yourself as a right winger. But he and Palin and Beck and all these people have figured out how to profit from this incredible mountain of stupidity that passes for the voting public out here. And like I said before, I wouldn't know Sarah Palin from Adam's house cat, although Kathy looks a little bit like her. But Newt, I've known Newt for a long time. Now, if you walked up to Newt and said, "Hey, Mike Malloy says he knows you," he would say, "What? Huh? What?" It's not that kind of knowing him. It's from living in the same general area and attending the same political functions with him over the past, up until about 1992. But prior to that, for the 15 years prior to that, spent a lot of time around this freak. And so in that sense, I think I know him. And he is, he's a hustler. He's not from here, as they say in Georgia. He's not from here, although he was a professor out at West Georgia College in Carrollton, Georgia, which is a quaint little town out near the Alabama border. That's where Newt Gingrich wound up, and that's where he carried on his serial adultery and divorced wives and married new ones and had affairs with interns. Yes, he did. In the U.S. House, a real shining, sterling example of American Republican conservative manhood. But Newt is back talking his family values again. These right-wingers just know no shame, do they? I mean, Newt has balls the size of Texas, doesn't he? Oh, my God. All these right-wingers do, these males, these white right-wing males. What a breed. What a breed of freaks.
Yeah, my current personal favorite is Karl Rove's 600-page opus in legal defense, Basically, that's all it is. It's like a 600-page legal brief on how to defend the Bush crime family should they ever be brought up for prosecution. And I love the title, Courage and Consequence, in which he displays neither, as all you see is his large backside running away from responsibility for any culpability in any of the crimes
in
perpetrated
right.
for 8 years, whether it was waterboarding or illegally invading countries or any of it. Clean air standards reduced, arsenic in the drinking water. I mean, it didn't matter. It was either Al Gore's fault or Clinton's fault or the Democrats' fault or Nancy Pelosi's fault or anybody's fault other than...
And he has the audacity to call it...
Courage and consequences. And he, like I said, he displays neither. Crazy.
No, just a Republican. Just a Republican. What a freak. We're out of time? Oh, my God, I was going to talk to whoever it was that's on the line there. Oh, well, we'll catch you tomorrow, okay? So, take care. I'll see you tomorrow night. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.